just between us. Hey! Just between us. Hey! Hello! I am Allison Raskin. I'm a writer, director, and aunt of two nieces.
Aww. And I'm Gabby Dunn. I'm a writer, bicon, bisexual icon, wink, and former Berkeley Beacon news reporter.
Oh, for Emerson.
Emerson College is Berkeley Beacon.
I know, but I would assume Berkeley Beacon was for Berkeley.
I know. It's because it's the cross streets that Emerson used to be on.
Oh, it's not even where it is anymore?
Nope.
Well, that further proves that newspapers are esoteric.
Wow! I majored in print journalism. How dare you?
And look where you are now.
I know. Can you believe that?
Welcome to Just Between Us, a podcast about brutal honesty,
female friendship,
and completely unsolicited advice.
What hobbies? Well, you were doing Greek life in college.
Yeah, for two of the years. And then by junior year, I realized, hey, I don't have any friends here. And then I dropped out.
Yeah. But that
every
was...
time I've joined a community, I've subsequently dropped out.
Have you tried being gay?
No.
It's a hard one to drop out of.
Well, is it? How many straight girls have dabbled?
That's true. And then they're like, not for me.
Not for me.
I spent 2 years in gay, and then I realized I didn't have any friends here, and I dropped out. Well, no, like, but that was your only thing that you were doing as an extracurricular, or no?
No, I was on the improv team.
Oh, yeah, but then you left that, too.
Well, I was kicked off of that, Gabby, but thanks for bringing it up.
I was on a sketch comedy team.
I know.
And then called Chocolate Cake City, for those Emersonians listening.
Stop bragging about all the things you did in college.
I'm just saying, I'm curious what your activities were.
Yeah, my activities were improv, eventually stand-up as well.
Yeah.
And that was it.
I was deep, deep, deep into the newspaper.
Okay.
I loved to write the news.
I know, because that was a large part of our first book, I Hate Everyone But You.
Oh, yes.
And then the sequel, Please Send Help, is available everywhere now.
Oh, yeah. And my quote-unquote character, the characters are loosely based on us, but not truly us, because there's a massive amounts of fiction involved. But that character is a journalist, a reporter.
I know.
Former journalism major, same as I.
I really want to start a drinking game where every time you bring up that you went to school for journalism, everyone has to hit themselves in the
head.
Why
do you? Okay, if you're in your mind, why do I bring it up all the time?
I think you're just so fucking proud of it and you're cocky about it and you love to brag about it. That's my only
But it makes
option.
No sense because it's not even a job anymore. It would be like, I majored in like the
No, because
the
it makes you sound
Model
intellectual.
T car.
No, shut up.
Oh,
journalism is still a job.
Yeah.
You love to bring it up.
Yeah, you think it makes me sound intellectual?
Yes, I can't imagine why else you're doing it.
Because everyone else out here majored in screenwriting.
So you're just trying to seem different and smarter?
I guess so.
Yeah, it's working.
I mean, is it? It's working?
Not on me, but I'm sure
I'm on other
people. Yeah.
Okay, well then I'll keep it up.
We have a very exciting episode this week.
Oh yeah, we're talking to Fazia Mirza. We're going to ask her some tough questions.
And later we'll talk about what does mental illness really look like?
And it's just a picture of our faces.
Yeah. But first, we're going to answer a listener's question. Hit it! International question! International question! International question! Anna, Chicago. Anna wants to know, how do you know if you're asking someone you're in a relationship with to do too much? And when do you think it's appropriate to ask people to make sacrifices? So what was very funny about this question was that brings to mind, like, I don't know, moving to another city with
compromise,
you,
yeah,
or something like huge. And it turns out that basically Anna is upset that her girlfriend won't send her nudes.
Okay, yeah, let's dive in.
Let's dive in. So basically, you know, they met while in school, and now they're on summer vacation, and they're long distance. I personally send her a ton of photos of myself, and I enjoy doing that, and I ask if she likes it, and she says she does. The only thing is I would like to also receive photos from her, and like, yeah, I'm sending her nudes, but she doesn't even have to do that. She just never sends any pictures.
And even of her face.
Even of her face. And she doesn't really feel comfortable taking photos of herself, which is a damn shame because she's gorgeous. It wasn't a problem when we were in the same state because I could see her all the time. But now I just like to look at her once in a while, naked, fully clothed. I don't care. But I don't want to force her to do something that makes her uncomfortable.
She also says that she can't show other people what she looks like because the photo selection is lacking.
That, I think, doesn't matter.
It matters to me.
Really?
Yes.
You want to be able to show people what your partner looks like?
Yes.
Why? To brag?
Well, a little, but also I hate like a lot of times, and this has to mostly do with men that I've dated, where you'll be like, oh, let me show you what he looks like. And then you'll go to his Instagram and the Instagram is like a picture of a hot dog, the sunset, like a shoe. Like it's never their actual face. And so how can you show anyone what they look like?
I guess I just feel like that's not a good enough reason to ask this person to do something that makes them uncomfortable. Is to show them off. But I understand, like, wanting to see this person you're in a long-distance relationship with.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a tough one because I'm very photo. Like, I love photos. I love, if I'm FaceTiming with someone, I'll hit screenshot. Like, I love to just have pictures of the person that I like so I can look at them all the time. And I would feel very sad if I didn't have pictures of the person I like.
Well, I think that this speaks to a much broader issue, which is that your girlfriend is clearly very insecure.
Yeah, it's sad.
And so that makes me sad. And so I think that that happens a lot in a relationship where, like, your partner has insecurities and you're trying to push them to do something that will either, like, make their relationship better or make their lives better, and their insecurity sort of stops them from doing it. And so how do you know when to keep pushing and when to back off?
Yeah. Nudes, you got to drop that.
Yes.
You gotta drop that.
We can't request nudes if the person's not comfortable.
You cannot request nudes. The cloud isn't safe. The nudes need to be sent with the person fully on board with them. Otherwise, they're bad.
Are you still sending nudes?
Yeah, I love to send nudes. What? Love to.
Yeah, because you're in a long distance thing now. Are you sending nudes left and right?
Yeah, a little bit. I just recently was showing a friend pictures and I was swiping, swiping, swiping. And I was like, well, there's my tits. Swipe, swipe, swipe. But yeah, I think you gotta, like, if you're long distance, I understand wanting to send nudes and receive nudes. But I also think, like, if the other person isn't fully on board, you can't. The nudes are tainted.
Well, I also, in terms of, like, because the original question is, when is it appropriate to ask people to make sacrifices? And I think that it's difficult if you just look at one specific thing, which is like, I want my girlfriend to send me photos. How does your girlfriend act in the rest of the relationship?
Yeah, is she like, oh, I want to get tacos for dinner. And you're like, I don't want tacos. And she's like, we will have tacos now.
Exactly. Like, is there compromise in the rest of the relationship? And this seems to just be one thing that this partner is just like really uncomfortable with doing.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then I think, you know,
you got to drop it.
It's not worth it. It's like, you know, hopefully you can maybe work on building up their self-esteem over time and
say nice things to them and say that you're beautiful and all this kind of stuff.
It makes me so sad for her girlfriend.
I know
that she, you know, I think that like you have to, because of this, kind of like examine the rest of your relationship. Like how is the intimacy when you are together?
Yeah.
Like, are they comfortable being naked around you? Are they, or like, because some people like aren't photogenic. Like, I'm not really particularly photogenic.
And I disagree.
I can take a great photo, but it's one of 100.
Okay.
But, like, all the time I take terrible photos. And, like, but in person, I'm not insecure and, like, I am comfortable with how I look and whatever. You know, I'm not, like, covering myself or not looking someone in the eye, you know. And so if it's really just a thing that's specific to photos, then I'd say, again, let it go. Sorry. You'll see them when you see them. But if it's a bigger issue, then I think that, like, you have to wonder if the girlfriend is ready to be in a relationship if they're so uncomfortable with themselves.
Because they can't love themselves. Like RuPaul says, if you don't love yourself, how are you going to love somebody else? I also think, like, you – just because you send nudes, you don't get to expect nudes back.
No, no.
Absolutely not.
And I think you also have to ask if your partner wants them.
She said that she said that the girlfriend says that she likes them.
Yeah.
I do feel I at least if I send a nude and you're not going to send one back, that's fine. But I'm going to need a very enthusiastic reply.
Oh, of course.
I need like emojis. I need like the most enthusiastic reply of all time.
Yeah, it's an ego boost.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and I think that that's a if thing you need a lot in a long distance relationship.
Yeah. You need words of affirmation.
Absolutely.
You need an ego boost.
And like reassurance that they're still super interested in everything.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I guess maybe the other option is just is FaceTiming more.
Oh, yeah. And then don't screenshot the FaceTimes.
Because that's a violation of their privacy.
Exactly. And also they can see it sometimes.
You know, and so then you get to still see their face.
Yeah.
just makes me sad.
I know, because I do agree that I love a photo of my person's face.
Yeah. And I've never really had someone request photos of me, but if they did, that would make me feel happy and special.
They could just Google you.
Okay.
If I want to see your face, hop on a Google. You know?
Yeah.
I think that you've said your piece, and I think that you can try to, like, build them up and be sweet, but I think you do have to, I don't know, because, like, also in this letter it says that they send each other letters, and that the girlfriend sent her cookies from where she works, and it's, like, very, very sweet. Like, the girlfriend's not like, no, I don't want to, you know, have anything to do with you because we're long distance.
Right. So when it comes to, is it appropriate to ask? Mm-hmm. I think in this case, it's really not, because they are doing a lot and bringing a lot to the table.
You have different love languages.
Mm-hmm.
And look up Google love languages.
Yeah.
And read about them. But also, like, if just because I think it's this thing of, like, just because you like doing things one way and you express your love one way doesn't mean that the other person has to express their love in the same way.
But you also have to ask yourself, is that the way you want to be loved?
Absolutely.
And sometimes the answer is no.
Absolutely. Because I love acts of service. That's
yes,
mine.
Do.
Like, if someone sent me cookies, I'd be like, that's amazing.
Right.
But if it's like physical touch or something like that, it's like good, but I don't, it's not like as important as if you like bought me all of my groceries.
See, for me, if I'm not getting physical touch, I feel off.
Yeah, then you're like, well, that's my love language.
Yeah, like, yeah. Jake is, like, always has his, like, arm on me or, yeah. like, is touching me in some way or mm-hmm. holding my hand mm-hmm. or, you know, and, like, in the few times when he's not done that, I'm like, something's wrong.
Mm.
I feel disconnected from him.
So your love language, Anna, is nudes. And your girlfriend's love language is cookies.
And there you go.
And you got to think about that.
Will that work? I don't know. Before we wrap this segment up, I also want to say it is not your responsibility to give your partner self-esteem.
Yeah.
So if this person is insecure, that sucks. And it's hopefully something that they can overcome. But it's not on you to make them feel good about themselves.
You're not going to say enough complimentary things to talk them into being secure enough to send nudes.
I think
that's a losing journey.
I think that you can express that you wish that they felt more confident in themselves because they are wonderful and you see such wonderful
yes.
and you see such potential and such amazing qualities in them. And then it's on them to take that and work on it.
Yeah. Be like, I wish you saw yourself the way I saw you.
But I also think that it's really, really hard to be with somebody who doesn't love themselves.
And how is that not what RuPaul is saying?
Okay. If you want to submit your international question, send it to justbetweenuspod@gmail.com. That's justbetweenuspod@gmail.com.
Up next, we've got a juicy interview with our highly esteemed guest, Fazia Mirza. Just Between Us.
Hey! Hi, everyone. Allison here. Anyone who knows me well knows that I love to read. I am always looking for new books, and that is why I am so excited that this episode is sponsored by Book of the Month. Book of the Month's mission is to help readers discover new books they love and to promote the work of emerging authors. It was so fun for me to get to pick which book I wanted to read this month and have it shipped right to my door. Book of the Month makes it easy to decide which book to read next. Each month, the editorial team reads through hundreds of new titles. They pick some of the best new books for you to choose from. All the books are good, so you can't go wrong. Every aspect of the Book of the Month experience is designed to be fun and special for readers. They have a highly anticipated release at the beginning of each month. Books are delivered in this really adorable bright blue box, and there's a fun app to help you pick your book and track your reading process. They also offer great values on new release hardcover fiction. It's much cheaper than other options. Shipping is always free, and with a loyalty program, you get rewards and even lower prices the longer you stay as a member. My first book from Book of the Month was The Husbands by Holly Gramazio. I am tearing through this book. It is so fun. It's basically about this woman who one day comes home and there's a husband in her apartment, and she's like, "Where did you come from?" And then she figures out that every time her new husband goes into the attic, a new husband comes out, and she's like shuffling through all these different husbands from the attic trying to figure out which one is the best. It is right up my alley, and I love it so much. So if you want to take part in Book of the Month and have a brand new book shipped right to your door every single month, Go to bookofthemonth.com and get your first book for $5 with code PETALS. That's $5 off with code PETALS. I cannot recommend this enough.
With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you all about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. And then she can either type her response or use their voice-to-text feature. And mylifeinabook.com compiles all her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. Right before I found out about this project, my mom made an offhand comment about wanting to write a memoir because she had such a wild childhood and there are all these things she's never really talked to us about. But asking someone to sit down and write a memoir is kind of daunting. So then I got her mylifeinabook.com, and now she's getting prompts to answer on a weekly basis, and it's a lot easier than just undertaking an entire memoir. I'm so excited to see what my mom does with mylifeinabook.com because she's someone who doesn't always feel comfortable just sharing about herself, but having these prompts and knowing that I really want to hear her answers is going to inspire her to probably share more with me about her life and her upbringing than I've ever been shared with before. So I'm so excited for that. Check out mylifeinabook.com and use code JUSTBETWEENUS at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com. Use code JUSTBETWEENUS for 10% off today.
Welcome back to Just Between Us. It's time for the juiciest, most scandalous, controversial segment onto all of podcasting. Tough questions.
Our guest today is Fazia Mirza. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
How do you wear a lot of hats. So introduce yourself.
Well, and the weird thing is I'm wearing no hats, like tangible, actual, physical hats right now.
It's disappointing, to be honest.
I know. There's one in the car, so I'm happy to go get that. I feel like that's kind of my thing where I'm like, well, what have I not done? I write, I produce, I act, I create. I was a lawyer.
What?
I know, don't judge me. And so now, yeah, I do all the things.
What
I feel
kind
like
of
go
lawyer?
Where the spirit goes. I was a litigator.
Oh, that's the best kind.
Is it?
Well, for going into acting.
Actually,
it's very performative.
Yeah, well, what I realized is I like acting like a lawyer more than being a lawyer.
Every time I watch, this is horrible, but every time I watch a TV show, I go, I could be a cop. And then I go, no, you can't. What are you talking about?
I mean, I believe that you could be a cop.
I would not want to be a cop.
On TV.
On TV. I want to play a cop.
Yes.
In a fantasy world and not ever actually be a cop.
Yes, agreed.
I wanted to talk to you because you write on The Red Line, which is a show on CBS.
Yes.
And
it was a show. It's a limited event series, so it's completed its journey now.
Oh, nice. Oh, wow. Okay.
It's reached its end point, in the story.
But that's got to be great knowing that I would love to write for limited series because it's got to be so tough writing for all these shows where you're like, I don't know if we'll get another season. So
true.
We have to somehow have loose ends and also make people feel satisfied.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and it was super intense too because it was a limited event series. So, I mean, it was intense because I typically do comedy and this was
not comedy
because it was our drama, very intense, really kind of that, based on all the like terrible truths that are happening.
It's about police brutality.
Yes.
And fucking like
violence against black
violence,
people, violence against queer, gay and LGBTQ people. And I got a funny joke one or two times, but that was it. There was it was really dramatic and wonderful and a great learning experience and really like life-changing for me.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So also, like, we know each other through gay stuff and gay film stuff or whatever. But you post a lot about this and you talk a lot about this. And it's very interesting of, like, being a Muslim and also being queer.
Mm-hmm.
And how those – because I think a lot of times you have to defend yourself because people don't understand how that is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes back to the show because you wrote a queer Muslim character on the show, mm-hmm. which, like, got a lot of press and was very celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
But I think – do you get a lot of stuff when people being like, that's not a thing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a line in the show that says, you can't be gay and Muslim at the same time. And it's like, well, I'm not a hologram. Like, that is literally what I say in response to people.
Yeah.
And it's not just people are like, oh, that's just people in tiny towns in Kansas. Mm-hmm. No, it's actually kind of a lot of people all over the world.
Because mm-hmm. You're a practicing Muslim.
What does practicing mean? Like,
it's something you identify with?
I feel like I'm not ritualistic. So okay. I mean, I personally don't like pray five times a day.
Mm-hmm.
My mom knows this, hates it. always. I mean, she hates a lot of things that I do. But I'm not necessarily very ritualistic, but I'm definitely like my culturally, you know, that's how I was raised. I couldn't imagine sort of identifying with another religion.
Mm-hmm.
And that has shaped to me, mm-hmm. whether I am close to God or not close to God, like that is my kind of sphere of identity. And also, like, I feel very much aware that, you know, when we live in the West versus, you know, if I was raised in Pakistan, where my family's from, I'm sure I would have grown up and acclimated very differently.
Mm-hmm.
But living in the West, we do live in a very I culture.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, embracing and claiming all of these identities, it's very much sort of, you know, it's both I don't do it to be political, but I am politicized.
Yeah, the and idea think, of a yeah. queer Muslim is very political inherently.
Right. Exactly. And I think it's important also because when you claim who you are, when it feels safe for you, it also changes the stereotypes that people have.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, people might look at my mom who wears like traditional Pakistani clothes and wears a hijab and they're like, that's a Muslim. And then they might look at a cutout of me and be like, that's a teenage boy. But at the same time, we're both Muslims.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's kind of really also, I feel like, important for me in that way.
What was it like coming out to your mom?
Oh, God. That, you know, I came out to her on an airport floor in Atlanta, the Atlanta airport.
Oh, what a beautiful airport.
Beautiful airport. Long, big airport.
Yeah, the atrium. That's
very
the middle
big,
of that airport.
Yeah. Over GChat.
What? Oh, so she wasn't at the airport.
No.
Oh, okay.
No. I also feel like it places us in a very specific time when we're still using GChat.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
Right? Remember when we used that all the time?
All the time.
All the time.
I never really had anyone to chat with.
Oh.
Allison.
Really?
These sad asides. I don't know. I chatted a little. Keep going.
Yeah. So what happened? Well, I was going through a breakup and—
How old were you?
You know— 29?
Okay.
Was I? No, 32?
A little bit, a little bit late in the coming out game.
Oh, I'm a late comer.
Oh, okay. Did we'll get into that.
Is that the right, is that the right phrase?
Yeah. Late bloomer.
I'm a late coming, a late bloomer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a late comer is probably something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, and very frustrating.
Yeah, exactly. I'm still waiting.
So you just were talking to her on GChat?
Yeah, and I was sad. I was in a really bad breakup and, you know, I was moving out and I was sad. And it was one of those times where you just want to feel unconditional love by somebody in your life. And you're like, who is that person?
So you'd been living with your partner and they didn't know.
No, we were roommates.
Got it.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was a classic
roommate.
Classic gay roommate situation.
Mm, oh, my God.
And when I told her how sad I was and how hard it was to move, and I've written about this in – well, many times, but in my one woman play, I talk about this, but I told her, I, you know, mom, She said to me, I could have helped you. I would have brought the van. I would have helped you move. And I said, no, it's not that. I miss it. I miss my roommate. And she was like, I miss my friend. And she said, oh, you'll get a new roommate. And yeah. That's when I just said, Mom, she's not my roommate. She was my girlfriend. We were dating. And then over GChat, it's like beat, beat, beat.
Right.
And then she's like, that was a bombshell. Like really great comedy timing on my mom's
yeah,
part.
Yeah, I know.
And then beat, beat, she says, how could you be so selfish? And that launches us into the kind of, you know, I mean, the classic religious rhetoric that comes mm-hmm. when you come out and have that moment. And yeah, I mean, it was pretty intense.
Because they believe, they're very much religious. They believe yeah. very much.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that a lot of my work is so much about understanding how my mother became religious, whether mm-hmm. it's based in reality or not. Because when she was growing up in Pakistan, she wasn't religious.
Really?
Yeah. You know, and I think that's true of a lot of folks, you know, whether they're immigrants or whether they're getting older. Mm-hmm. It's sort of I feel lost. I feel like an outsider. Yes. I feel mm-hmm. brushed with mortality. How do I feel safe? How do yeah. I feel connected to this thing that makes sense? Or nobody looks like me. I'm the only brown person around all white people. Or nobody speaks my language. Or we're the dark house on the block during Christmas. Mm-hmm. I always am explaining myself. And so I feel like for her, there was this moment of reconnection to faith. Mm-hmm. Or connection to faith for the first time yeah. as a way of survival.
How old was she when that happened?
I kind of remember it. We were still living in Canada. I'm also Canadian. Don't be wow. jealous.
Actually, I'm extremely jealous.
It's okay. Don't worry. I'm not married yet.
Yeah, this is just becomes us trying to get healthcare.
Yeah,
listen.
This is us trying to get Canadian citizenship.
I mean, could we do that? Could we, you know?
Some sort of triple marriage where now we're Canadian citizens.
Like, you must be so hot in the dating market having Canadian citizenship.
I mean, it's my best play. I've actually always wanted to write something called My Four Wives, and it's inspired by the fact that everyone's like, oh, well, Muslim men can have four wives. And I'm like, well, why can't Muslim women?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
But yeah, so we can get married. We'll get health care. But yeah, growing up in Canada, which is where I was born, you know, we lived in Nova Scotia. So it's like super like Canadian Maine, very mm-hmm. white, very rural, small town on the ocean. And it was there that my mom, you know, kind of my dad after he had his first heart attack, like all of, you know, and again, for me, this is all speculation because now if you were to ask her, she's like, Fawzia, you know, came back to God, you know, that was
yeah.
the way. Like there's almost like a rewriting of
yeah.
history. So, yeah, I think, I don't even know.
But you saw it happen. You were alive
for it. I saw it happen. Yeah. I was alive for it.
Was that confusing for you?
Yeah, because one day it was like, oh, she's wearing a headscarf. Or wait,
yeah.
suddenly she's praying. Or wait, suddenly she's getting mad if we're not, you
yeah.
know, praying.
The rules changed
the
in your
rules
house.
That's a great way of saying it. The rules changed. You know, whatever the rules were before, even if you didn't fully understand them,
yeah.
they're just different.
Yeah. Were you also ever like, oh, because like, were you ever also like, I believe in God, I want to do this, I am praying,
I'm probably in some ways, I feel like I am more likely to pray now.
Mm, yeah.
Isn't that wild? And I think it's less about God, I just sort of now connect. Because I was never really religious at all. For me, I was always the one who was like, I don't want to do the thing you're telling me to do.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Oh, I'm not supposed to hang out with boys or mm-hmm. do this or this. Well, I'm going to go do everything I want secretly and lie about it. And I don't want to pray. I just want to play. Yeah. But like now I think of prayer, like in the very Muslim style of prayer. And I'm like, that's basically yoga. Like I look at
yeah,
religion
yeah.
kind of all as culturally, geographically, like this is all the same thing. This is just people evolving over time and creating like a new thing. It's almost like if you look at fitness routines or diet routines, you're like, oh, well, that evolved from the whole 30 evolved from this and this evolved from that.
And how is that not a religion?
Exactly. How it is, I think. Kind of
yeah.
culty.
I mean, I think the big distinction is if you're not like this, though, you're going to hell. Or there's something,
yeah.
you know, like you're, like if, I mean, yoga people do really tell you to do yoga, but like,
right.
they'll still be friends with you, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Was there an idea of, like, because you're saying you didn't super buy into it, but like, if was there an idea of like, oh shit, like if I'm gay and Muslim, how is this going to work out?
I mean, I never really thought about what gay was until like much later. So in, I'd say like mid to late 20s. Mm-hmm. And like, it just didn't cross my mind at all. Like, and
really?
I'd
did you date guys and stuff, or?
I mean, define date. What is that? You
know? Yeah.
I mean, there was so, you know, the thing is, I was raised in a house where, you know, you weren't allowed to hang out with boys, hug boys. I wasn't supposed to talk to them anymore, or like, definitely not have sex with them. So then, we didn't drink. I didn't wear low neck, V neck shirts, or skirts. I wasn't allowed to do that.
Religious houses where they're like, don't talk to boys, don't have sex with boys, don't touch boys, and then they're like very religious, and then the child is gay, and I'm like, yeah, what did you expect was gonna happen?
You told me to hang out with girls. I did.
I know that's un-PC, but I'm always like, you kind of, right, guys?
No, it's true. It's like, okay, I'll hang out with girls.
Yeah, you did this to yourself.
I like this. Yeah,
you didn't tell me the rules.
Yeah, exactly.
What does hangout mean? No, I agree with that. I mean, it definitely impacts, like, and I think, I mean, look, we could look at probably, like, any space where everyone's like, you must spend time only with that gender.
Yeah.
You're going to become intimate with that gender.
Yeah.
I feel like that, the numbers just mean that, you know, like, if you look at, like, harem culture in, like South Asian kings, like, the guys who built the Taj Mahal, like, back in that era, I mean, the harem culture, like, those were a bunch of women, trans people, queer men, like, all hanging out in a place at the pleasure of the king. The king was not around that much. Like, they were all having sex with each other for sure.
Yeah. Never thought of that.
I mean, now,
and now it's all you're gonna think about.
Exactly. Well, and that's actually something that I think a lot about too, is like, you know, what were our people like before colonization? Right?
Yeah.
Like, what were we like before, you know, being South Asian? It's like, what were we like before the British came over and they were like, you're weird and we want your land and your spices. How do we do that? Let's take from you, make you hate each other and fight, and then strip away the power from, like, you know, I mean, trans people have always been people of power, and in our stories and a natural part of our culture, we just didn't have those same names.
We didn't
or
have
labels.
Words for it, yeah.
Exactly. We didn't have words for it. So, yeah, in some ways I'm like, okay, well, maybe we're getting to a place where we're all going back.
Yeah, like when people are like, well, you know, in ancient Greece, people were gay and no one gave a shit.
No one gave a shit.
And now all of a sudden, I mean, that's not colonization, but like, you know, it is very
ancient tradition, ancient culture, ancient people.
Well, I think religion did a lot of disservice, right? Because it like very specifically stated, or people interpreted it to specifically state that like homosexuality is a sin.
Right.
Whereas like, maybe in Greece, they didn't have that. You know what I mean? They just had, like, gods who were fucking each other.
Yeah, well, they're basically, like, here's the sky.
Right.
The sky rules. The zodiac is our – that farm up of zodiac is, like, that's our ruling planets.
So when you started to realize that you were queer later, were you like, oh, how is this going to square with the Muslim culture?
You know, I feel like I was most worried. I mean, I feel like there was just so much shame around being a person, having a body. Like, I don't think I say that I became comfortable having a body and being a sexual being when I sort of embraced my queerness. And when I became really comfortable having sex with women is when I became comfortable being a woman.
Having
a body.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much shame and like fear and denial of pleasure attached to all of our cultures.
Yeah.
And in America, and it's like, no, this is, you're a slut if you do this.
Well, America is so uncomfortable with sexuality.
Oh, body is just like, get that body away from me.
Just like the difference between like how nudity is treated here versus like literally anywhere else.
Yeah.
It's such a big deal. And it's like, that's the problem, is because it sexualizes the body.
Right. In a way that it doesn't need to be.
Like, this is skin, this is fat.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, yeah, it's kind of a, like, I think a lot about like what is it, like water culture, you know, like where there's Greek baths and Turkish baths and Korean spas and Japanese spas and, you know, all of these spaces. I'm like, okay, well, that's how people are comfortable with bodies. Like, we're supposed to share space and be naked together and it's safe and it's okay. In America, it's like, I won't do that.
Yeah.
I don't want to look at your body. Like, don't look at me.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
If you were to have kids, would you raise them Muslim?
Oh, great question.
Thank you. I've been sitting on it.
Oh, my God. Were you wearing bottoms when you were sitting on it?
Don't worry.
Yeah. I feel like if I were to have kids, I would raise them just to love the world. Because I feel like I would want to sort of share my Muslimness in terms of, like, again, sort of culturally, like, these are people. Mm-hmm. And some people will say bad things about Muslims, but your mom and your grandmother, you know, Muslims are beautiful people, as are Christian people and people who don't believe in God and yogis and, you know, people who, even Scientologists.
So you wouldn't expect them to identify as Muslim?
No. I feel like I'd be like the straight up, yeah, no, that's a straight up. But the straight up sort of like gay love.
Yeah.
You know, love everybody, be respectful,
but there,
be good.
How is that tied into, though? I guess we're differentiating Muslim from Pakistani identity.
Yeah,
because like there is a thing where, like, you know, you dress very cool, and you can, like,
thank you,
and you know, but it's, and so that's like people won't go Muslim when they see you,
right?
But they will say, oh, Pakistani person.
Or they might say, what are you?
Yeah.
Are you, what language do you speak?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people don't necessarily peg me, you know? Yeah. They're like, who's that Eric Estrada looking person? Like, what is she? I can't tell her ethnic identity. I feel like the brownness is something that would be really important to me. Like,
for kids,
hey,
right.
Here's like a shawl I got from my mom.
Right.
And here's Pakistani clothes and here's this and here's this. Mm-hmm. To me, it would be like a great grocery shop where it's like, these are all the things that I love from from the shelves, and they're going to go in the cart and I'm going to give you this cart, baby.
Yeah.
Literal baby.
Yeah.
I feel really conflicted about this as well, having grown up Jewish. And Judaism is also a culture.
Yeah.
And an ethnicity in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So I don't believe in organized religion, and I find it to be extremely harmful.
Yeah.
And it's not something I can endorse in any way. But to me, to think of my kids not identifying as Jewish is weird, because I also think of it as an ethnicity.
Yeah.
And so it's like, how do I, you know... How do I say, well, you're not, we're not going to temple, but we are celebrating Passover, you know,
and like
figuring out that middle ground.
Even more than that, being like, oh, we don't identify as Jewish, but you do have every neurosis under the sun. And it's like, well, then you're Jewish. Hate to break it to you.
Right? And I don't know exactly what to do about it. And also, a lot of times this is so stupid, but like for preschool, you send your kids to Jewish preschool.
Yeah.
Because it's just like a good education.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's what my sister does and my boyfriend's brother's doing, you know. And to me, I'm really like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Because I just don't want my kid to just meet other Jews, even when they're that young.
Send them to a Montessori. I went to a Montessori preschool.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, we solved that. But I'm just saying, you know, like.
It was, you know, one of those like alternative learning preschools.
Yeah. But I don't know, like, I'm so aware where it's, like, I feel so conflicted where I want to be, like, I want to keep some of it. And then other parts, I'm, like, don't believe the Torah.
Yeah.
You know?
I wonder if, like, one of the things I think a lot about is that idea of, you know, why can't we have it all? I mean, and part of it is everyone's going to have an opinion on that.
Yeah.
And on you, but I feel like, well, they have those opinions anyway, so we have to transcend that noise to create our own identity, which is kind of how I feel like I've gotten to this place. But I love that idea of, well, we celebrate Passover. That's just the tradition in this household. You can do it if you want to.
Yeah.
But, like, this is where your mother comes from, and this is where this person comes from. And this is where this person in your life comes from. This is what we in this family are growing up to do. And you don't have to do it.
Right.
You know, and I feel like that have to
right.
is the part where it becomes like, I'm giving you your identity versus I'm sharing my things I like or mine.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Because, I mean, those things are beautiful. And I think that's what I love. I love the gathering. Like, why can't we can love the gathering? And, God, I don't want to be Jewish or Muslim, but, like, there's something about I love when you go to the mosque and, like, everyone's just bustling around and they're, yeah, like, feeding you and there's always the annoying aunties. Like, there's something I also love about that stuff.
Oh, totally. There's comfort there.
There's comfort there.
And, like, I'm, like, thinking if I get married, I'm like, well, I don't want there to be a religious ceremony at all, but they better lift me in the chairs.
Yeah!
You know, like, like, and they better do, you know, like, the dance and the, like, and it's such a weird, like, it's sort of like a smorgasbord where I guess you just pick and choose what parts that you like.
Well, and actually, my friend recently just said to me, because she was like, oh, do you ever want to get married anymore? And I said, I don't know. I think I stopped believing that I would get married once I realized, oh, I'm not going to have a husband.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to have kids in that same way, you know? Because I thought, oh, I'm going to be 25 and I'm going to have my first kid and then I'm going to have a husband and we're going to do all these things. That didn't happen. I mean, there's still time.
Your mom's listening.
My reaction was like, thank God. Yeah. Like, being 25 with a kid, what a nightmare.
Oh my God. Right? And so I thought, oh, I won't get married then. And she said, you know, because I'm like, oh, well, now I'm pursuing this career and this other life. And, you know, I don't know if I can provide for someone else in the way that one is supposed to. And she's like, you know, I wonder if there's a reframing of marriage, too, where it's like it doesn't have to be the, like, patriarchal, misogynistic way of thinking about marriage. It's just pure partnership. Like, you don't have to be in a position where you're like, I can buy you a house.
Yeah.
I can provide these cars and I'm going to be able to pay for kids and I'm going to be able to give this thing. It's like you're just giving
only,
love.
But why is that only your responsibility to pay for the house?
Well, exactly. And I think that's part of it too. It's like, oh, well, if I can't have it in the way that I was supposed to have it, that means I probably shouldn't have it. And it's like, wait. That's a story we've told ourselves.
Yeah. No, I think it's just a partnership.
Yeah.
It's just saying, okay, let's fucking tackle this thing together. That is life.
Yeah. And I think with kids too, it's like, it's not the thing that we thought. It's kind of whatever you want it
whatever
to be.
Keeps them alive.
Oh, God. That's great.
But you can also both go in on a house.
Yes, and should.
No, of course, yeah.
And the person that you're with could also be successful.
Oh, I'm down with that.
That's great.
I'm like, girl, you want to bring the house? That's great.
Yeah. Get yourself taken care of.
Yeah.
Find a sugar mama.
I'm okay. Are you listening? You know who you are.
Yeah, right? As an artist, you're just like, hello, does an older established lesbian wish to sponsor me?
That's all Gabby wants.
That's all I'm looking for. Please.
I mean, look, it's like having a patron, right? Mm-hmm. Like, all great artists had patrons. So.
Yeah, you're right.
My dad's my mom's patron. He supports her photography.
That's Does your dad want to be my patron?
Probably. Cool. He's very generous. Cool. I just have one final question to keep it loose and light. Do you guys believe in God?
Well, I actually brought God with me. So surprise guest. Now, do you mean me or, you know, the billion Muslims in the
no,
world?
No, you specifically.
Oh, okay.
You're asking both of us if
we
believe in
God. We're all going to share.
Go first.
You know, wow. I definitely believe in, and this is where I come back to it all being the same. I think we're all sort of energetically the same. So whether we call it, I think everybody calls God something different, whether it's molecules, energy, astrology, Allah, you know, it's like I feel like it's all kind of that cosmic, karmic, same thing. Whether there is an actual heaven place or a hell place or a limbo place, I don't know. But I feel like otherwise it's all the same. I do believe in the goodness aspect. Like when you do good, when you are open and connected, like there are signs and energy in the universe that kind of propels and pushes you forward. And when you do bad in the world, you know, you will feel that in your body and in your spirit and in your heart, and it'll impact your life.
That was a wonderful answer.
Yeah.
I have the chills.
You can see why I wanted to have her on.
Yes, very good job.
Do I get an A?
You get an A. Oh, cool. I don't. But it's hard to square when I do believe in ghosts.
Yeah.
And so what's that afterlife about then? And also...
So you believe in ghosts specifically, like, these are people who lived and it's
their ghosts. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So So it's like, how do you, you know, if there's no God, then there's no afterlife. And then if there's no afterlife, where are the ghosts coming from? Is my answer also philosophical and good?
You get a B plus.
But it's a good way of thinking about it, because it's like, if I don't believe in that thing, right, like how does this other thing, because it's like it's a machine.
I just think we have to acknowledge something's going on.
Where are the ghosts coming from?
I mean? Like, agreed. Why are we here? What's happening? I believe in a God, but I also...
Oh.
I've always believed in God. There's never been a time in my life where I didn't believe in God.
But you hate religion.
Exactly. I hate organized religion, and I'm extremely spiritual and believe in God.
I had no idea.
That's so much
sense.
I tell
you all the time, and I think it is so kind of counterintuitive to a lot of my personality that I tell people and they instantly forget. And every time I tell someone, they're like, really? And I'm like, I've told you this.
Well, there's a lot of stigma, I think, to when we say the word God, what that means.
What that means.
And so people are like, oh, well, that means you have to be like, you know, super into Jesus and like, Jesus, what would Jesus do? Or like, that means you're extremist or whatever. And really, it just means you believe in, I think, the energy.
Yeah, like a higher power. I think that there's a different level. Someone created us.
I don't, but I do believe in astrology.
Okay, and there we go. And that's why
we're an odd couple. See, that's also gods and goddesses too, right? Like the astrology of like, you know, the Greeks and the Egyptians talking about, I don't even know, like Zeus.
Yeah.
And all those cats.
Okay.
I really hope God is not Zeus. He's problematic.
That would be the worst.
I know, it'd be so upsetting.
God's just turning into goats coming down here to fuck people.
Exactly.
Oh, I wish that wasn't real.
Could goddess just be a mermaid of some kind?
Oh, I love
I'd be into that. Wow. On that note, would you like to play a game with us?
I've been prepping for this game.
Really?
But I don't know what kind of game we're playing.
Okay.
So I haven't done any preparation.
I believe in my initial email I said you will be playing a game show.
That's what I looked at, and that's and I was like, ooh, I'm bad at guessing games.
Well, this is called hypotheticals.
Oh, great. So anything is right.
Anything. Well, everything's wrong.
yes.
I'm going to give you some
sound like
scenarios.
My mother. Great.
And you'll tell me what you would do in those scenarios.
Okay, great.
And Gabby doesn't know what I'm going to say either. So you're both playing. Okay, so our first game is America's Favorite Game Show. Would you stay with this cheater? Okay. You find out your partner of 17 months has nightly sex dreams about your best friend. When you ask if anything physical has happened in real life, they reply, one time at a beach party, they touched toes. Would you stay with this cheater?
Can I ask why 17 months?
I just like to be specific.
Oh my God.
Life is in the specificities.
No, that's true.
Okay, wait. Every night?
Every night they have a sex dream about your best friends, and at a beach party, they touch toes.
So they tell you about this every morning?
No, you find out because in one night they scream their name. Like they moan their name, and you're like, what was that about?
Okay. And then they tell you the truth.
Yeah.
And do they want to actually be with your best friend?
They don't know why this is happening to them.
They're not attracted to them.
No, they are.
Are they in love with you?
Yes.
And
attracted?
And are you attracted to your best friend?
No, no.
And why did they just touch toes?
They, you know, at first it started out as an accident, and then their toes interlocked.
To like, hold toes?
Yeah, they held toes.
They were holding toes?
Yeah, just for a second.
So it wasn't a pinch, it was like a holding.
Yeah, there was like, they gently held each other's toes for a couple of seconds.
I will not stay with this cheater.
Why?
Because I don't trust that they're not in love with my friend, and I don't like it.
Okay. And
I just don't like it. My gut says no.
Your gut says no?
Yeah.
I definitely think we'd have to have a conversation and confront whatever it is. If I felt like we had that romantic connection that was super, super strong, I'd be willing to sort of be like, okay, let's maybe couples therapy it.
You do have that connection, but also every night they dream they murder you.
What?
Oh, wait a minute. Where did that come from?
Wait, what?
That's just the rules of this game, baby.
Damn.
So Foz chose to stay.
Yeah.
Is that what I did? Oh.
Oh,
but
did
wait,
you?
With the murdering?
Oh.
That comes out in couples therapy.
Oh. I mean, I feel like then I would progress to be like, maybe this isn't working.
Yeah.
Every night I dream my boyfriend leaves me. Let's move on.
Do you?
Yes.
Also, you know, how are they murdering you? Because some people with stabbing, it is sort of a phallic.
Sexual
thing. So they could, the murder could also be erotic.
And I would also ask the question, are they my sugar mama?
Yes, they're very rich.
Okay, so maybe we'd stay a little longer.
Yeah. Smart.
Yeah.
Our next game, Are You a Terrible Parent?
Oh, perfect. Perfect.
Your Ready. Child won't stop talking to his imaginary friend, and it's getting in the way of your life. So you introduce your own imaginary friend, who later kidnaps your kid's imaginary friend. And despite calling the imaginary police, neither are ever heard from again. But your kid is less annoying. Are you a terrible parent?
I lost track of who was real and who was imaginary.
This is maybe the funniest thing I've ever heard. Wow, I am blown away by your genius.
Thank you so much.
I want a short film about this.
Yes.
One is forthcoming.
It should be because it's so good.
Do you think imaginary friends are actually ghosts?
Ghosts? Absolutely,
maybe,
I do.
Sometimes, but some kids are just little liars.
Absolutely. What the fuck? I had an imaginary friend when I was a kid named Ducky, who was a human-sized duck, and he used to tell me to do bad things, and yes. My parents told me that I had to tell Ducky to go away.
This is what parents do.
And then I did, and Ducky did go away. But my parents would be like, why did you, like write all over the table or whatever? I'd be like, Ducky told me to.
Oh, kids do that all the time. It's bullshit. That's why they had to come up. You had to come up with your own imaginary friend to kidnap their imaginary friend.
Yeah. But also, I think Ducky was getting progressively more violent, and they were like, okay, I think we gotta get Ducky out of here.
I think what's important to note is even in the imaginary world, police are useless.
Yeah, right? Okay,
I like those rules.
I think you're an inventive parent.
I feel like that's good parenting.
Okay, I think so too.
Yeah, because you're a parent not afraid. You're not like, what is perfect parenting? I feel like that's a Western concept.
And you're willing to play on their level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Play by their rules.
Yeah.
I'm glad this was just me testing out if I can do this later when I'm a parent.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah. I don't think it's bad because you also didn't say they killed them. You said they kidnapped them.
Yeah, they went off for a new life.
So that's great.
Oh, that means they're probably living in like imaginary heaven somewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're having a lovely time.
Yeah, they're having a great time. And every now and then you get an imaginary postcard from them.
Wish you were here.
Yeah, but don't follow us.
Oh my God.
Don't ever visit.
I just imagined a parent like going through the mail and then miming holding a postcard
exactly.
And being like, it's a postcard from our imaginary friends.
And the kid is now like 15 and it's like, shut up.
Or the kid is like one single tear.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten about them, Mom.
Our final game. Everyone's favorite or second favorite or third or fourth favorite. Is this person an alien or just rude?
Ooh.
While trying on bathing suits, the salesperson throws a bucket of water on you so you can see how it will look wet. They are genuinely shocked when you get mad. Is this person an alien or just rude?
Oh my God, where did the water come from?
They had it ready for you. They would do it to every customer. Really? You didn't know. You didn't know it was coming.
Oh, and was it cold or warm?
Lukewarm. So felt pretty cold, but it was lukewarm. They were like, this is the temperature of a pool.
Did they have a towel ready for you?
No.
I feel very comfortable saying that I think they're rude because I like to think that aliens would care for me a little bit more than that.
Why?
I believe goodness of aliens.
Oh, that's nice.
I think
but humans are pieces of shit.
Humans are definitely pieces of shit. Aliens, I just think they're good weirdos.
Okay.
I'm going to go with alien because it seems like the type of thing that they would like maybe learn about in school but get like a little bit wrong. Like they'd be like, Earth culture, when they wear a bathing suit, they wish to be wet. And the alien was like, got it, and wrote it down and then just like didn't really follow up.
Gabby, you're close to being right. The thing is with the aliens, they can dry themselves immediately. So they don't understand that it's a problem. There you go. Thank you so much for joining us. Where can we find you?
Currently right here with you. but then you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, under the Fawz, THEFAWZ, and that's where things happen, I think.
Ooh, and things are happening.
Can people watch your films and stuff?
You can watch some stuff. My website, FawzAmirza.com, there's some stuff up there. But yeah, there's stuff on there. You can watch my feature that I also made called Signature Move on Amazon or iTunes.
Amazing.
That's what I was leading you to promote.
Oh, thank you. I need that. I need direction.
Yeah.
I need that.
stick around after the break. We'll be talking about what does mental illness look like.
Well, I'm so glad we just did hypotheticals so people can know.
Welcome back to Just Between Us. It's time for topics.
Baby.
So this week I wanted to talk about the specifics of mental illness because I've been realizing that I say I have OCD, but nobody really knows what that means.
Yeah.
Or what that means specifically to me.
Okay.
Because it manifests so differently in everyone.
Yeah.
What do you think of the topic?
I like it. Because I think it's very important because I didn't really understand what OCD meant till I met you. So what are your symptoms?
So my symptoms are majority cleanliness based.
Yeah.
Right? And so what's happening with me at all times is that I'm tracking dirt.
Really?
And I'm tracking contamination.
Okay.
And so my greatest fear is being contaminated.
Okay. What does that mean to you?
Right. So contaminated to me is just like the germs or the dirt or something not clean has touched my body or my clothes. Uh-huh. And I'm at a level of uncleanliness that I would not feel comfortable touching any of the furniture in my house.
Oh.
It's a contamination I would not want to bring into my home. Okay. And that means I need to like shower or change my clothes.
Okay.
But
you're not actually dirty.
I have no idea.
Oh, so okay.
That's where it becomes mental illness. Because
oh, got it. Okay.
So for a lot of people who are worried about like cleanliness, their fear is getting sick.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if I get sick.
Okay.
Like, I'm actually, like, really chill around people who are sick. And, like, yeah. If you have a cold, I don't really care. And, like, I shake people's hands. And it's, like, if I think you're clean, I don't care if you're sick.
Mm-hmm.
And so the end and the fear is simply contamination.
Right. But in what ways would you be contaminated?
If I sat on a park bench.
Got it.
If someone touched me who I thought was dirty.
Okay.
Sometimes I'll just be walking around and I'll go, I'm contaminated.
Really?
Yes, because something has happened that's led me, I just like, there's been too much buildup and I'm suddenly contaminated. And in the past, before I was medicated, when that would happen, that would like really like ruin my day. But now I can have moments where I feel, oh, I'm contaminated. And then I can say, no, you're not. And I like push it down and I can keep going. And then like within a few minutes, I forgot that I got contaminated.
Oh.
So for me, doing much better now, it's not that I don't have those thoughts.
Yeah.
I don't give into them as much.
Yeah. I feel the same way. I was just explaining this to someone that like, so I have bipolar disorder and I was like being medicated or like going, you know, being in therapy or whatever I'm doing for it. It doesn't mean that I don't have the initial impulse. Mm-hmm. What it means is it's like a train track. And I'm pulling the lever, and it's very hard to pull. But I see the thing that I really want to do, which is burn it all to the ground and kamikaze everything and fucking go nuts. And I see the other way of doing things, which is not my instinct, not my impulse. I it's going actively against my instinct. And I pull the lever, and I pull myself over to the other side. And I go, whatever you're thinking of doing, do the opposite of that.
And before you didn't have the capabilities to do that.
I wasn't able to either see the other side and I wasn't able to pull the lever to get to the other side. So then I retrack and my train goes on the other side. But I think people would think, oh, she just doesn't even have that anymore. She only wants to do the right thing. She hasn't she's gotten rid of that other impulse. No, I see it. I still see what I want to do,
mm-hmm.
and but I at least now have the 30-second interval where I go, no, and I do the other thing.
Right, where I, like, I'm still tracking, like, that you put your dirty jacket on my chair.
Yeah.
But then when you leave, I don't immediately Clorox wipe the chair.
Oh.
So that to me is like, success, and that to me is, like, growth.
Yeah.
But obviously, I would prefer to not even notice that you put your jacket on my chair.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and so to me, that level of like fixed, like, it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
And so other things is, like, I can't rewear clothes.
Yeah.
I can rewear jackets.
Okay.
But I won't rewear anything else.
Yeah.
So I won't rewear my pants. I won't rewear my shirts.
You wash your jeans every time?
Yes.
Wow.
If I'm showering, I have to also wash my hair. I can't not wash my hair because if I don't wash my hair, I don't feel clean.
Oh, okay.
So I have all these people yelling at me all the time that you shouldn't wash your hair every day. And I'm like, well, I'm sorry, but this is what I need to do to function in the world.
Okay, interesting, interesting.
And so all these other things that I've kind of like, I've kind of gotten to a point where I'm like, okay, so what do I need? What yeah. is like where like it it's not negatively affecting my life
mm-hmm.
and it's something I can easily maintain
mm-hmm.
and like it just keeps me comfortable.
Yeah.
And so to me, those things are like, washing my hair when I take a shower and not rewearing my clothes.
Yeah. Well, can you talk about the other aspect of OCD that I think I never realized was part of it, which is the lying?
I'm incredibly uncomfortable with lying or anything. I'm always very afraid that I am misrepresenting something.
Yeah, you are constantly worried that you're lying.
I'm constantly worried that I'm lying. A really big thing for me is if we go experience something together and then you go relay what happened, and if it's not how it actually happened, I freak out.
But also, don't you think that part of that is that two people can experience something and one person experiences it a different way and that's just as valid?
No, I think you're lying.
See? Well, that's wild.
I know, and like I can't – so – often I'll relay.
Because it has to be relayed the way that it happened to you specifically.
Yeah, or like you know that you exaggerate.
But sometimes people like experience things differently.
Even things, if you'll be like, tons of people responded positively to this episode. And I saw on Twitter it was only 3 people. I will feel compelled to say it was only 3 people. That's not tons of people.
Oh, but sometimes, I mean, you know, on Instagram too or in DMs or whatever.
It makes me physically uncomfortable when you do that.
Weird.
And like, I am always terrified that I'm unintentionally lying. So all of the time, I don't know if you've noticed this, I'll tell you something. I'll either tell you a fact or I'll tell you a story. And then I go, I'm not sure if that's true, actually.
You do say that a lot.
All the time. I go, yeah. I don't know, maybe not. And if you question me about it at all, I go, actually, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, even if it is a fact that you do know.
I just, like, you can immediately make me second guess myself because I am that terrified of lying.
But, like, but if you are saying a fact that is true, then you're backing up on it because you're worried that it's not true.
I'm giving you the caveat that I'm not sure.
But you are sure.
No, I'm not.
Because you, okay.
I'm not. Some things, obviously, I'm sure about. Like, yeah. If I have a very specific memory of it,
yeah.
I'll fight you to the death on it because right. I know that it's true. But if there's any doubt in my mind and, like, any like, I don't have the best memory, so kind of yeah. anything that's involving in that, like, yeah. I really feel uncomfortable that I'm, like, misguiding you. And then another thing I need a lot is a lot of reassurance.
Yeah, the asking over and over again.
Yeah, so if you tell me that – you tell me something positive – if you say it to me only one time,
yeah,
I don't believe it. Like, yeah. I need to hear it multiple times for it to, like, truly sink in.
Yeah, like, you have evidence that shows that these things are true, are happening. Like, or, you know, if you're like, we did that, right? And I'll be like, yeah, we did it. And you'll be like, oh, the big one, you know what, that you always go, we did enough today, right?
Yes.
Did we do enough today? We did work today, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be like, what? We just finished all this work. Of course. We did way enough work today. And you'll be like, 5 minutes go by. We did enough today, right?
Yeah.
Yes, we did.
I know. Welcome to mental illness.
I know. But it's like, it's second guessing, like, your worth almost.
I'll call my mom. I'll tell my mom what I did and ask if that was enough. You know, I'll call my mom to, like, ask for permission to not to work that day. And I'm 30 years old.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
I think that being medicated has helped a lot with that. Like, I finally have learned how to, like, not be productive all the time and, like, be okay with it. And that's been a huge relief on my life.
Yeah.
Like, that has, like, night and day made me so much happier as a person to not feel the need to be productive all of the time.
Yeah. Because, like, did we do enough today is such a loaded question.
I know. But that's, like, how I think.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing where, like, people go, like, but why or whatever. And it's, like, mental illness.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you.
Exactly.
I wrote an essay. This is the funniest. I wrote an essay for a magazine about making irrational decisions on because of bipolar disorder. And the editor for it like gave me notes. And one of the notes was, I said something about flying to Europe with no money, which I did in 2012. And she was like, was there an event that precipitated this decision? And I just wrote back, yes, mental illness. Like, what?
Yeah.
The big takeaway is there's no reason for any of it. I'm insane.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think people have a really hard time with that.
Yeah.
Like, this woman could not get it.
It's also really hard for me to be in other people's spaces.
Yeah, you don't like it.
I don't like to go, unless I consider you to be very clean, I don't like to go to other people's homes.
Let's see. What are my symptoms? What would you say my symptoms are? I feel like you have a good grasp on this.
I mean, you've changed a lot, but I think when you were undiagnosed and unmedicated, there was a lot of rage.
Yeah, very angry.
Like, very angry. I think that you felt like that things were, like, stacked against you, or that people were out to get you, mm-hmm. in a big way, and that, like, took everything personally.
Well, that, as part of bipolar disorder, that's, like, delusions. That's,
yes.
like, you know,
yes.
that's sort of the bipolar one, like, paranoia, delusions, like, almost grandiosity of, like, people are trying to get me.
Yeah. You felt that way.
Yeah, I know.
I also think that you saw all relationships sexually.
Again, bipolar disorder.
Yeah. Like that.
Check,
you,
check,
that
check.
You needed to relate to everyone also on a sexual level.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which I don't think, I think you're doing a lot better with that now.
Yeah. That's, you're just doing a bipolar checklist.
And I don't even know that much about bipolar. These are just like the changes and things I've seen in you. And
yeah, yeah. No, you're right.
I also think that, yeah, that you would make impulsive decisions.
Yep.
And I don't know if the need to, like, change your appearance and to dress in a flashy way and to, like...
Yeah, that's interesting.
Like, you know, like, you had to put this, like, image of yourself out there.
I don't want to judge everybody who does this, but I don't think it's not... For me, I don't think it's not tied to...
Mm-hmm.
Bipolar disorder, which was changing the way I dress and changing my hair color all the time and changing I love to change how I look. I haven't done it as much, but like someone asked me recently, like, you have so many different pairs of glasses, and I was like, yeah, you got to keep it spicy.
But that to me is like different than what you were doing a few years ago.
Right. That's like a very minor, me changing my glasses is right. very minor compared to like changing my entire haircut and entire hairstyle yeah. and entire way of dressing and whatever all the time.
And I felt like you had, like there was a time where like you had to be like, I'm this way. Like yeah. you have to see me this way.
Yeah.
Or like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I also, I have like physical symptoms of anxiety too.
Yeah.
Like, And it manifests in, like, very physically for me. Like,
yes.
Like, weirdly, like, scratch. Like, I had a whole thing where I had, like, a bruise, like a handprint bruise on my leg. And I was like, what the hell is this from? And I realized that in my sleep, I had sweatpants on. And I was scratching my leg in my sleep. And mm-hmm. it wasn't breaking the skin because it was through the sweatpants. So it was just causing finger-shaped bruises on my leg.
Yeah.
And I was, like, scratching myself in my sleep from anxiety.
Yes, you physically manifest your anxiety.
Hugely. It's yeah. so physical. Like sometimes, like, my hair will, like, I can feel it, like, that, like, my hair is falling out. Like, it's really wild.
I use pain to deal with emotion a lot. I don't do it as much anymore, but
yeah.
that was a thing I've done since I was a kid, where it's, like, pinching to, like, calm myself down.
Yeah. That's, like, that thing of having the hair tie on your wrist that you're pulling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think people don't realize what it actually looks like. I think people think that mental illness is about one thing, or they think that it's like, well, now you're cured, or like they think, like, I don't think there's a lot of people that speak in specifics.
Yeah, I mean, I shot a sketch show for a now defunct like network, and they would make me go on the couch, and I knew that the couch wasn't clean, and I would like hold up production to get a Clorox wipe to like wipe down a mm-hmm. couch. And I was like, I know that I look insane, but I can't, I can't control the impulse to do this.
Yeah.
Like, I can't, or I know in my head that if I don't do it, then the outcome of not doing it is so much worse that I will feel so uncomfortable and so dirty and so contaminated that I would rather look insane to these people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, like, I always talk about, like, you know, you can kind of realize when it crosses over from just, like, I don't, you know, like, I like things clean to, like, neuroses is, like, when it just, like, interferes with your ability to function.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, I couldn't, you know, I'm not functioning the same as everyone else. I'm getting the Clorox wipe and I'm wiping the couch down.
Yeah, yeah. And that's not, an OCD isn't like, oh, I just wish it was clean.
Right.
And I also, like, you know, in terms of interfering, like, well, I had my, I was going through, like, a big depression. You guys heard it on this show. And I was like, you know, there was a lot of impulse. There was a lot of suicidal ideation, a lot of impulses to drive the car off the road or stuff like that. And I had to be like, no, no, stop. Like, you have the thought, but you don't do it. Mm-hmm. And like, and it was really, really hard to go against the thought that you were having because it's like soaked into your brain. It's like not one part of your brain. It's like your brain is a sponge and it has soaked up. Mm-hmm. Kill yourself.
Yeah.
And so I think like it interfered. I mean, there was like work stuff that I had to do that I was just like, I can't do it.
Yeah. But I think that that's good because I think that like that gave you the time to heal versus if you'd just gone ahead and done the work stuff, then the thoughts are just getting stronger and stronger in your head.
I'm lucky that I'm able to be like, I need time off.
Yeah.
But other people are not.
Well, mental health days should be considered sick days.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But nobody gets those.
No. Or if you are doing that, you have to pretend something else is wrong.
Yeah.
Like you should just be able to take a certain amount of mental health days.
Yeah. Or yeah, like you have to say you have a cold or mm-hmm. something. Yeah, I agree. Because it nobody takes it as seriously as like physical health.
Right.
And it is like such a, I bet people would be more productive if you, in their work. Not to be hyper-capitalist about it. But if you gave people mental health days, they would be better at their jobs. Again, that is a capitalist reason for this, but I'm just saying.
I also, stress is a huge trigger for me.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm stressed, my OCD gets a lot worse.
Yeah.
So like when things are going good and it's like chill and like I can handle a lot more, and then I can tell that I'm really stressed when things start to, when I get even more worked up about things and I'm noticing more stuff about cleanliness and I'm more and more uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And like I have to sort of like stop thinking about it. Like even if you were to start talking to me about something, like we're talking about traveling for the tour and someone was starting to tell me what their friend does in a hotel room to stay clean. And I was like, don't tell me this.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't want these thoughts in my head. I don't want to adapt this behavior. I want to just ignore it and like keep it to what I'm due now.
You have a physical reaction to that. When we've had like conversations that you didn't want to have about like certain cleanliness or certain things like that. Do you know that you do this? No. Rub your chest until it's red.
Really?
Yeah. You'll put, like, if we're talking about something and you're uncomfortable or you're, like, having some sort of mental health thing related to it, it's not scratching. It's just, like, you'll take, like, your fingers and rub your chest, and then your chest will be red.
I was staying at my boyfriend's parents' house, and we walked in, and his mom had put two towels on the bed for us, clean towels. And I walked in, and my reaction was, oh, no. Because the towels were contaminated by the bed. And I need to have a clean towel.
Yeah.
And like, and then Jake knew that that's what was happening in my head because he's so wonderful and attuned to this stuff for me and getting more and more attuned every day. And like, was like, do you need another towel? And I was like, yeah. And then we like went to go see if they had another towel. And we like went into his parents' bathroom and I saw that the other towel was on the tub sitting next to his mom's purse. And in my head, I was like, that's even more dirty. No, 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 no.
Yeah.
And then I had to be like, I'm fine with the towels I have. And I had to like run back into the room and like, you know, I'm mortified that I'm causing this problem. I don't yet feel comfortable enough with his parents to like say that I'm freaking out about the state of their towels because they provided me with clean towels. I'm just,
yeah,
you know, and then I'm like, to Jake, I'm like, okay, I can use this. It's okay because I'm like, this is the lesser of two evils. It's not my home. So you know, whatever. And then like when I'm using the towels, I'm opening them up and trying to use the side that didn't touch the bed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just bullshit like that all the time.
In the very beginning of our friendship, it used to hurt my feelings because I took it personally. I was like, Allison thinks I'm dirty. Yeah. Nothing I do is good enough. Like Allison thinks that like I just am like gross and a pig. And like that's so mean.
I'm sorry.
It had nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
It didn't have anything to do with me. But I would just, I would just be like, because I didn't realize it was irrational. So I guess I thought like, oh, okay, well then I'm the nastiest person alive and I'm disgusting. Like, whatever, fine.
No, I think like everyone is.
I think everyone is. You just have to realize it's not personal.
Yeah.
And it has
airplanes, if I can't have anyone be on an airplane and then remain in their clothes in my apartment.
Yeah.
You have to shower immediately.
Yeah.
I don't like touching luggage. Like to me when I was, okay, so growing up until it got better, I could not let the suitcase touch my body. So imagine trying to take a suitcase down a huge flight of stairs, trying to not let it touch your body. You can't lean it against your leg. You can't support it in any way. I like almost hurt myself so many times because I was just desperately trying for the suitcase not to touch my body.
If you are a person who casually goes, I'm so OCD, I like my desk to be neat, go fuck yourself.
I mean,
let me know when you can't walk down some stairs because you can't touch the luggage.
But now sometimes when I touch the luggage, it touches my leg and then I'm okay. And that's beautiful. And that's growth. Melissa, come on in and talk about us.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Is that stuff not normal?
Sweetie, no.
So what do you think?
I'm going to give it 2 old-fashioned thumbs up.
Oh, wow.
Old-fashioned.
Yeah.
A throwback to a normal rating system.
Yeah, wow. I wasn't prepared for that.
It's so traditional.
I know. I'm going to give it 8 out of 8 Pisces.
Okay.
Because Fazia said she's a Pisces, and I really loved her philosophical engagement with that.
I know. She was so wise.
Isn't she the best?
Yeah, she's great.
Very delightful.
So delightful.
Just, like, such good energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I could listen to her talk forever. I love
it. She's got a good voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna marry her not just for her Canadian citizenship, but also for love.
Okay. I support that.
Wait, so what was your favorite part? What did you learn?
I think that my favorite part was...
Mine was when you asked if we believe in God.
Yeah, that was my favorite part too.
Was like as a light... I really want... just to end this on a light note, do you believe in God?
It's called Tough Question.
I loved it. I thought it was so wonderful.
Do you believe in God, Melissa?
I do.
See? There we go.
Yeah.
Two out of four.
What religion are you?
Christian.
Do you go to church?
I have gone to church a lot, but I don't really go anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like I feel like I have like a relationship with God and I don't need to go to church.
That's how I feel. Yeah. I just feel like it's so harmful. Mm-hmm. It's often used as an excuse for so much hate and violence.
Mm-hmm. I am blown away by how many people believe in God around me.
What did we learn?
I learned a lot about Muslim identity and versus like Pakistani identity and how Fazia sees herself in both of those like worlds and, mm-hmm. and how those informed like who she is as a person, even if she's not like praying 5 times a day or whatever, like that you can have all of those in as part of you and still be like a modern person.
Yeah.
So I think that's great. And I think that that's probably true for Muslims that are very observant. I'm sure they don't feel represented, you know. If you're very observant but also a young person who is, like, is in the modern world, I think there's no representation of, like, different spectrums of Muslims. Mm-hmm. It's basically just only one kind that we see.
Yeah.
So I like that. I liked having her on to show that there's not just one version of that.
I learned that you love to have photos of the person you're dating's face.
I love it.
I had no idea that was so important to you.
It's weird to me.
Why is that weird? Oh, my God. If I showed you my phone right now.
that you just like screenshot people while they're on FaceTime, and they like, because you get a notification when you screenshot.
I do. Yeah. Yes,
it tells you.
I screenshot on FaceTime all the time.
That's so funny.
I do it to be funny.
Uh huh.
But mm-hmm. I also, oh, my phone is all photos of this person right now.
That's very weird to me.
And on screenshots of them from FaceTime.
Okay. Cool.
It's flattering.
Is it? Because usually when you're FaceTiming, when you screenshot, it's not a flattering picture.
I know.
I wait until they're doing something cute. And then I screenshot.
Okay.
I like whatever. I watch.
Us God believing.
Yeah.
I can't believe you guys. Whatever. Go fuck yourselves. I'm nice and sweet and romantic, and you all can suck it. Thank you so much to Fazia Mirza for being our guest.
Just Between Us is hosted by me, Allison Raskin.
And me, Gabby Dunn.
Our engineer is Brendan Burns. He also composed our killer theme music.
Our producer is Melissa D. Moss, and our supervising producer is Josephine Martirana.
Our executive producer is Chris Bannon.
Just Between Us is a production of Stitcher. Dear God, it's me, Margaret.
Stitcher.